Some people see a partial eclipse and wonder why others talk so much about a total eclipse. Seeing a partial eclipse and saying that you've seen an eclipse is like standing outside an opera house and saying that you've seen the opera. In both cases, you've missed the main event. Although that quote was made in 1983 by the director of Hopkins Observatory, J.M. Pasikoff, similar comments have been made by thousands of people who have had the opportunity to witness total solar eclipses, yours truly included. My name is Troy Klein, and welcome to another Sun Earth Day Highlights podcast. In our last podcast, we talked with one of the world's foremost experts on eclipses, Fred Espenak. He filled us in on different types of eclipses and gave us some more information about an upcoming eclipse that will occur on August 1st, 2008. That eclipse will be visible from within a narrow corridor that will traverse half the Earth. The path of the moon's umbral shadow will actually begin in Canada and extend across northern Greenland, the Arctic, central Russia, Mongolia, and China. In today's podcast, we'll continue our chat with Fred. Since he has witnessed so many eclipses, I ask him to explain what it feels like when you're in the path of a total solar eclipse.
It transforms the scenery, the landscape, from bright sunlight to this very eerie, unearthly twilight in just a handful of seconds. So it's very dramatic. It's unlike anything that anybody ever sees in their normal daily life, because you get plunged into a twilight, about as dark. It's not as dark as night, but it's about as dark as the sky, perhaps a half hour or 45 minutes after sunset, when you can start to pick out the brightest stars. The dramatic thing about it is you're plunged into this twilight in 30 seconds from bright sunlight. It's a very scary event to see day turned into this eerie twilight. And even with cultures that saw it thousands of years ago, you can understand and relate to how this terrified them. Even today, when we understand the mechanisms for how eclipses take place, it still sends a chill down your spine when you see one of these events.
Since Fred has witnessed so many types of eclipses, I ask him to tell us which type of eclipse he enjoys the most, solar or lunar.
It's hard to say whether I enjoy solar or lunar eclipses, which is better. Certainly from the viewpoint of a spectacle in the sky, nothing can compare to a total solar eclipse. However, you're putting all your eggs in one basket when you go on a solar eclipse expedition, because you've only got usually two or three or four precious minutes when you've got that opportunity to see the sun's corona. All the equipment has to be working perfectly. There can be no slip-ups. The weather has to cooperate. You've got to be at the right place at the right time. And it is very stressful. Now, after the eclipse is over, there's a great release and exuberation. Even if it's cloudy, the pressure is off and you can relax. So it's stressful leading up to the eclipse, but a great exhilaration afterwards. On the other hand, with a lunar eclipse, it's a very beautiful event, but it doesn't have that excitement like a shuttle launch or a solar eclipse where you've just got those 2 minutes. Because with a lunar eclipse, the total phase usually lasts an hour or more. So it's much more of a leisurely event, and you can sit back and you can watch it and you can relax. So I like solar eclipses and lunar eclipses for different reasons.
I thought it would be interesting to ask Fred how long he's been eclipse chasing and why.
This year will mark the 38th year that I've been chasing eclipses. The first eclipse that I witnessed was back in 1970. At the time, I was a high school student. I was an amateur astronomer, and I knew about this eclipse several years in advance. And it was unique in that it passed through the eastern United States. So it was only 600 miles from where I lived, relatively close. So it was a really great opportunity. I think I'd only had my driver's license for about 3 or 4 months, convinced my parents to let me take the car unchaperoned 600 miles south to North Carolina to get into this path of the eclipse. And I thought I was really ready for this eclipse. I'd read a lot of information about it. The magazines had stories about it. I had a small telescope with a camera, and I was going to take some pictures. And the experience of seeing that total eclipse changed my life. I was so captivated by those brief 2.5 minutes that I knew this could not possibly be a once-in-a-lifetime event for me. I had to see another one. I knew there was one, 21 years in the future at that point, in Mexico in 1991, which was relatively close by because it was the same continent. But even that was too long a wait. 2 years later, there was one up in Canada that I went to. And unfortunately, I was clouded out. The next one was tougher to get to. That was in North Africa in the Sahara Desert. By then, I was in college. So I approached the alumni organization and worked out a deal where I would give some lectures in the planetarium if they helped finance my expedition to North Africa for that eclipse. So that started me on my road to traveling the world for observing these eclipses. And I've been to every continent now to see and photograph an eclipse, including Antarctica.
During our conversation, I soon found out the words eclipse chasing might not be the most accurate terminology. In Fred's experience, you don't actually chase eclipses. You kind of, you intercept them.
Well, I'll tell you one little story about eclipses. Sometimes people refer to those of us who pursue eclipses as eclipse chasers. That's not actually accurate because we go to where the eclipse is going to go to. We are there before the eclipse arrives. So we're more eclipse waiters than chasers. But nevertheless, I was in Africa back about 28 years ago for an eclipse, and it was a clear day at the beginning of the partial phases, and it quickly changed from completely clear to 95% overcast. We saw holes of sunlight pouring down in the valley, shadows moving across the valley in front of us. So 5 minutes before totality, we were cloudy where we were. We jumped into this van, tore down these roads, got into a point where we were back in the view of the sun just as totality began. The vehicle was still moving. So we jammed on the brakes, everybody jumped out, we got to watch about half of totality before the edge of the clouds caught up to the sun and covered it up again. And at that point, I just grabbed my binoculars and ran down the road. And the clouds were moving so slowly, I caught up to the edge of the clouds and saw the moon and sun move back into the hole, and I watched third contact on the run. That's when I called myself an eclipse chaser for the first time.
Often during these interviews, I like to throw in a question about an experience that was unexpected or just flat out funny. With a slight grin on his face, Fred jumped right in.
A couple of odd things that have happened during eclipses. Actually, this happens fairly regularly at eclipses. But one time in particular that I remember was in Central Africa in 2001. About 5 or 10 minutes before totality, the sky is just starting to get dusky looking. There's still bright sunlight, but the colors are getting odd, the shadows are getting odd. And right about that time, the crickets started coming out. And they came out like with a thunderous roar that was really amazing. And they chirped right through totality, and as soon as the sun started coming back out again, they quieted right back down again.
In upcoming podcasts, we'll talk further with Fred about his experience as an eclipse photographer. Lumeo will fill us in on the latest Sun-Earth Day-supported eclipse activities for amateur astronomers. And we'll also hear from the chief editor of the Sun-Earth Day's Technology Through Time series, Sten Odenwald, about the latest eclipse editions. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Sun-Earth Day Highlights podcast, and we're very interested in hearing your questions and comments. If you have something to say, just send an email to sunearthday@gmail.com. If selected, we'll share your comments on one of our upcoming podcasts. Sun Earth Day is a program sponsored by the NASA Sun Earth Connection Education Forum at the Goddard Space Flight Center and at the UC Berkeley Space Sciences Laboratory.
This is Troy Klein signing off.